Agriculture and Veterans Budget Policy Committee will come to order. Members, we'll move right along because we'd like to be out of here by 5:30 at the very latest. And so we're going to start right in. The members will be coming in, and when they get here, I'll say a quorum is present. So first, I think we're going to start out, and we're going to talk about the state of dairy in Minnesota. And Kurt Zimmerman, Agriculture Marketing Division from the Minnesota Department of Ag, if he would come to the front. Let's hear from you first. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Zimmerman, and I need your name for the record.
Okay. Senator Vickerman and members of the committee, I'm Kurt Zimmerman, Livestock Development Advisor for the Department of Agriculture. It's a pleasure to be here today and to represent and to support the dairy industry of the state of Minnesota. My comments will be brief. You have quite an agenda, and you have some excellent presenters on your agenda here today, and I want to make sure we leave time for those. My purpose here today is to give you a little snapshot, a Reader's Digest version of the condition or the state of dairying in the state of Minnesota, and just a brief look at the significance of what dairy brings to our state and how important it is to agriculture. Agriculture is extremely important. In fact, there's only four states in the entire country that have greater ag output than the state of Minnesota. We are the fifth largest. We trail states like California, Texas, Iowa, and Nebraska. So agriculture is extremely important. What part does dairy play in that total package? Of the total $9.8 billion in cash receipts, livestock accounts for just over half of that. The interconnection between livestock and our grain farmers is pointed out in presentations to this committee over and over again. Dairy and cattle and calves account for about a fourth of the total livestock portion of that total. As far as Minnesota as a state, we rank sixth in the U.S. in the number of dairy cows and milk production. We're the fifth largest, as of this year, exporting state in the United States. Dairy products account for about $80 million in exports leaving this state of Minnesota. As far as the number of Minnesota farms with dairy cows, this number has been declining. The decline is somewhat slowed, but we have just under 5,200 farms with dairy cows in the state of Minnesota. We've declined about 170 farms just from a year ago. We have around 450,000 cows on our farms. That averages out to about 86 cows per farm. You'll be hearing testimony today from people that have fewer than that number, people that have above 80 to 100, and some that have a little more. We have the diversity of small, medium, and large in the state of Minnesota, and they're all important, and we need to support and maintain all operations of all size. Just a quick point of interest, we have 93 dairies, or approximately 95 dairies in the state that have more than 300 cows, and we have around 15 dairies that have more than 1,000. As far as the percentage of milk that the state of Minnesota and many of our producers that are here today produce, as far as the contribution to the total in the country, we amount for about 5%, 5.1% of the U.S. total. We've decreased just slightly as far as our percentage in the U.S. Despite the slight decrease in our overall U.S. share, the average or the production of milk in the state of Minnesota has shown a slight increase the last 2 years, and that's a positive note that I think it bears repeating. One of the things that we're looking at the Department of Ag as far as an overall trend is the production per cow. How much milk does each of our cows produce? And in Minnesota, overall, we average just over 18,000 pounds. There's different numbers we could use. The cows on test as far as the DHIA numbers, that total is around 20,000. But as far as our overall average, it's around 18,000 plus pounds per cow. How does that rank as far as the other states in the country? We're only 25th. So what we're looking at is an industry that's extremely important, that generates an awful lot of economic impact, but needs some support, needs some encouragement as far as trying to raise that production per cow up. Recently, in order to help the dairy diagnostic teams that are operating throughout the state, Governor Hugeson just appointed a dairy profitability advisory committee that will be meeting here at the end of this month for the first time to try to support the diagnostic teams and the dairy initiative programs that are out there working that many of you have in your own areas back home. We have these 5 to 7 person teams that are operating throughout the state, and this advisory team will be meeting to decide and to try to encourage these teams and how we can get the most to return to the state for the investment they're making and how we can support our dairy industry. That basically is where we are as a snapshot look as far as the industry in the state of Minnesota. The economic impact to our local communities, to our regions, and to the entire state will be touched on by Assistant Commissioner Hugeson from the Department of Ag in the presentation in just a little bit. I'd be open to any questions that you might have.
Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm
glad you come here today so we get a big picture of I know how important dairy is, but probably some members here had no idea how much milk was produced and how big and how some of the smaller dairies. But I think the key to dairying is just what you said. You can't keep a cow just for the love of keeping a cow. That cow's got to be able to produce or else it's not going to work. Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you explain to me how you can have more milk with less cows?
Well, it's
with the reduction in the herd. Just give me a quick
Mr. one. Chairman, Senator, the entire industry has had a couple of trend lines that many of us have seen over the years, and one is the declining number of cows or declining number of farms, and the other graph would show the other direction, and that is in how these farmers are getting more production per each cow out there. It's very similar to the crop industry where we have maybe similar acreage of corn, but the bushels that are coming out and into the combine hoppers are increasing. These dairymen that are here today would be the first of the prime examples of how they're getting more milk from each cow that's out there in the herds. Technology and management.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No, thank you very much. Now, Jim Borboom, the Assistant Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Ag, and he's going to present us with the Governor's proposal for Dairy Investment Tax Credit. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Borboom, and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Jim Borboom, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I appreciate the courtesy that you have in hearing the Governor's initiative. The Governor's proposal for the Dairy Investment Tax Credit is included in the Department of Revenue's bill, and I think some of you who serve on the Tax Committee have maybe heard that. It will also be part of our agency bill, and I'm here today just to, again, highlight some of the economic benefits of the dairy industry. And as Mr. Zimmerman mentioned, there's a lot of dairy farmers here that can tell their story much better than I can. But just to frame the conversation, the economic impact of the dairy enterprise really does begin on the farm, with the daily purchases of such items as feed, farm supplies, fuel, and veterinary care. And each year, dairy farmers acquire breeding livestock, they buy machinery and equipment, they make building improvements, all those things in order to upgrade or expand their dairy operation. I looked at farm business management records for the year 2005, and they show that the average dairy farmer spends $536,000 every year. Primary expenditures out of that $536,000 is $106,000 for feed and $102,000 for capital improvements to continue upgrading their dairy operation. These kind of expenditures and investments annually pump more than $1.2 billion into our state economy. With this sector, as well as other agriculture sectors, the dairy sector provides a huge multiplier effect to the state. We did a recent analysis in our agency through Ag Marketing Services, and that study showed that the total economic impact of dairy production and processing is a $10 billion impact. That same report showed that total employment impact of Minnesota's dairy industry to be more than 76,000 jobs, again, because of processing and production. Minnesota is home to several cooperatives and private companies that lead the nation in dairy processing. They include Land O'Lakes, Associated Milk Producer, Bongard's Creamery, First District, Kraft, Kemp's, Davisco Foods, to name a few. In 2002, our agency did a case study of First District, just as an example, taking a look at First District. which is located in Litchfield and Meeker County, a population of 6,800 people. First District Processing Plant produces cheese and milk products and has an annual sales of $200 million. The plant provides 150 jobs, and milk supply comes from more than 1,200 farmers in 33 counties. This, in addition to this direct economic impact, there's other spinoff benefits such as manufacturing, trade, services, transportation, construction. The total economic impact of just that one plant in Litchfield, Minnesota is $585 million and more than 4,000 jobs. So in summary, this multiplier effect and the kind of investments that farmers make, again, on their feed and their fuel, and the day-to-day operations, as well as investments they make on farm machinery and equipment and building improvements, provides about $15,000 in economic activity to this state. And again, I appreciate your courtesy of hearing the bill and the support for this initiative.
Preliminary numbers. Any questions of Mr. Borboom? Let the record show our quorum is present. Any other questions? Not thank you, Mr. Borboom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we will move into Dr. Bill Hartman, Minnesota Board of Animal Health. Mr. Hartman, welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and the State Veterinarian. What I'd like to do today is just talk to you about two disease programs that the Board of Animal Health has that impact the dairy industry and some concerns that we have with those programs. So I will, and Kevin Elfring from the Department of Agriculture is here with me today too, because one of these programs that we're dealing with, bovine tuberculosis, could impact the sale of milk, and Kevin's going to talk more about that. The first program I'll talk about is our Yoni's Disease Control Program. Yoni's, just as a background, I've handed out information on both of these programs to you. The Yoni's Disease Control Program is this one-page handout, and then I've given you a brochure on bovine tuberculosis. But just as background, Yoni's disease is a chronic disease in cattle causing diarrhea and wasting in cattle. It's caused by a bacteria. The disease is a significant problem in the cattle industry in the United States. It's not just a Minnesota problem, and it mostly impacts the dairy industry more so than the beef cattle industry. There really is no effective vaccine to prevent this disease in cattle, and there isn't a good treatment once an animal has it, and it's a fatal disease in cattle, so eventually they die from this disease. It does have a big economic impact, and there have been a lot of economic studies on the impact of this disease in the cattle industry, but there are a lot of numbers about it. It does have an impact on the individual producer who has the disease. The Minnesota cattle industry has recognized this as a problem in Minnesota and has been dealing with it for a long time. They've been proactive. The legislature has provided funding to the Board of Animal Health since 1998, and our current level of funding is $200,000 per year for the Yoni's Disease Program. In the last few years, we've gotten significant funding from the federal government. The peak amount of funding that Minnesota got in federal funds was $870,000 in 1 year. That level of funding has begun a decline, and I'll say right now that the federal budget looks like it's going to be significantly cut, so we're not sure how much money we'll get exactly this year, but it'll be significantly less than $870,000. The current number I have is $56,000. So we're looking at this program. It's been a very successful program for Minnesota and the dairy industry, how we will keep it moving on. As I said, Minnesota's Yoni's Disease Control Program is one of the most successful in the United States. We have over twice as many herds enrolled in the program as any other state. We're a little over 2,000 herds right now that are enrolled in the program right now. And the program really has two goals, is those who have Yoni's disease, to help them reduce the prevalence of this disease in their herd, And we've had good success with that. We've had some herds, both beef and dairy, that we've actually eliminated the infection from the herds. And in those that we haven't, there's been about a 50% reduction of the number of animals infected with this disease since the inception of the program. The other thing it offers is people who don't have Yoni's disease to be able to test their herds and provide assistance with that testing so that they can prove to others that they have a low risk for this disease and market their cattle at a higher level as replacements to people who have infection and are trying to bring in new heifers into their herd. So the program is very successful. It's going extremely well. It's been a good partnership between government and industry. We hope to continue that program, but we have some challenges with the financing. The second program I'll talk about. Yep.
Senator Wiggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I ask you a question about the Yoni's disease, please, before we move on? Is it Hartman?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hartman, rather. If an animal is diagnosed with Yoni's disease, is it a total loss to the farmer, or is the animal, can it be sold for slaughter and pet food, or what happens?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wiggin, there might be some people in the audience who could answer that better than I can, but it is not a total loss, and it depends on the individual cow. Some cows can live with this disease in relatively harmony most of their lifetime and still produce milk. Some animals will very early on in their first lactation come down with symptoms of the disease and have to be culled from the herd. But when culled from the herd, they can be sent to slaughter, so there is salvage value with them. But the main losses are lost milk production.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hartman, this is the budget division also. So you spent $200,000, state put $200,000 into this program, and you were able to get $800,000 from the federal government. Did I hear that right?
Yes.
And so now I think, and I was in Washington listening to gloom and doom out there, I think maybe we're going to have to see if we can step up to the plate and fund this program so it don't go back to where we've already brought it up to this point. So I think, members, we ought to take a look at that. And I always look at Senator Dale because he's my expert veterinary over here. And so, Senator Dale, how can we help?
Well, Mr. Chairman, at the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association convention meeting that was held last week, I mentioned this exactly the same thing, and I mentioned your name to the veterinarians as being very supportive of these kinds of initiatives, and if need be, I thought almost for sure that Senator Vickerman would come up with some money for some additional Yoni's disease control. So I'm very happy to hear you say that, and I give you some credit to you in advance the last week.
I tell you what, I used to dairy. And I can't imagine if one of your nicest cows come down with this, I call it a terrible disease, and have to move that critter to slaughter, get rid of it. My concern is, will it keep going if we don't at least hold it even instead of going back up, which it could? Because I never heard of it before until we sat in this ag committee and Senator Dale started talking about it. And Senator Langseff, you know all about Yoni's disease.
Well, our herd is almost been decimated by it. And I don't know, it seemed like we can't get on top of it. We got six of them now that are sick and so on. And well, I think we're going to be out of the business pretty quick. But normally, it doesn't happen until the second, third, fourth lactation. But my granddaughter had a heifer that she got a grand champion at the county fair and blue ribbon at the state fair. She got it in the first lactation, and so she was gone fairly quickly. And my granddaughter insisted upon a funeral service and all this this sort of thing. And I even read the funeral service program that she had written off. But it is devastating, and I don't know. We made the mistake of we always fed our calves cow's milk rather than the milk replacer. We were going to be extra good to them, you know. Well, it turned out that we were infecting all the calves, so I guess we weren't. But then it was so bad before we knew what was going on. But I don't know. I've heard that most of the herds in Stearns County have got it to a certain degree. But yeah, it is. I never heard of it until, I don't know, 3 years ago or so.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And, Doctor, you talk about a realistic farm plan once it's diagnosed. What typically might that look like?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scogin, what we do is we'll send one of our district veterinarians out to talk to the owner and the veterinarian who takes care of the herd, and they'll discuss ways that the disease is transmitted within the herd. And the most common way for the disease to be transmitted is when a cow that gives birth has Yoni's disease, passing it on to the calf. So there's a lot of effort in that maternity pen to get those calves away from the cow as soon as possible so as they don't suck on the teats of the cow, and if there's a little bit of manure there that has the bacteria in it, then they get infected at birth. As the calf grows up, it becomes less susceptible to the disease, so it's very early in the birth or in the life of that animal that you have to be very careful that they don't ingest some of the bacteria.
Mr. Chair, in our situation, we've got dried colostrum that we buy, and we don't let, if we can help it, let any of the calves suck on the cows, because that just automatically passes on if they've got it. So.
Any other questions on Shoney's disease? Dr. Hartman, we got another problem with bovine tuberculosis.
Mr. Chairman, one of our biggest challenges right now is the reemergence of bovine tuberculosis in northwestern Minnesota, and I won't go into great detail on this. I testified in front of this committee last week about this, but we have found bovine TB in seven beef cattle herds in Roseau and northern Beltrami counties. DNR has also identified infected free-ranging white-tailed deer in this area. It's a very small, localized area, but they have found infected deer as well, which further complicates the efforts to get rid of this disease. Because of that, Minnesota's TB free status has been downgraded. We're now a modified accredited advanced state, and I'm sure there are many people in the audience whose herds have been affected by that. If you're showing animals, oftentimes they have to be tested now, or if they're leaving the state, they have to be tested. And even though this isn't a disease that we've found in the dairy cattle, it still impacts the dairy industry for those reasons. How it might impact a dairy producer would be this testing that's required when they're going to move cattle out of the state or go to potentially to a county fair or to the state fair. We've made good progress in eliminating the disease, we think, in cattle. We've identified those seven infected herds, depopulated all of those, and most of the people have brought cattle back onto their farms. Two of them have not yet. And we're about three-quarters done with the investigation and testing herds that bought and sold cattle from there, about three-quarters of the way done with testing herds in the area within 10 miles of those infected herds, and we're not quite half done with our statewide surveillance that we have to do where we're testing 1,500 herds. But we're making good progress there. DNR has a strong plan that they've just put a news release out on how to deal with the infection in the deer as well. However, there's a couple of issues I think that we need to be aware of. One of them is that we talk about that we would be eligible for our TB-free status in 2 years, but if this infection stays in the deer, that may not be the case. In other words, if we get rid of the infection, prove we don't have any in cattle, if we've got this focus of infection in deer, we may not get our free status back. So we need to be aware that that problem needs to be solved along with the cattle. And then the other issue is once you're a modified accredited advanced state, it only takes four infected herds found in a federal fiscal year for you to drop to the level below that, which is a modified accredited state. Unfortunately, the last two infected herds we found were both found in October, and the federal fiscal year starts October 1. So we have to go now another until September 30th without finding more than one infected herd. And with that, I would turn it over to Kevin Elfring to talk about the impacts that might have.
Welcome to committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kevin Elfring. I'm the director of the Dairy and Food Inspection Program for the Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture in the state of Minnesota actually adopts the pasteurized milk ordinance, is the regulations that govern the grade A dairy program in the state. And because of the concerns with bovine tuberculosis, and as part of the pasteurized milk ordinance, only milk that can be used for pasteurization has to come from herds that have this modified accredited advanced status or higher. And one of the issues that we've been working with is at least preparing so that we're ensuring that milk that is produced in Minnesota is going to be able to freely move in interstate commerce. We've already had some discussions with the Food and Drug Administration, also with the Board of Animal Health, working with the United States Department of Agriculture. And we really feel that if we were to have the misfortune of dropping a status, that we would be able to put together a plan for testing animals that would continue to have milk being able to move freely in interstate commerce from Minnesota. So we've been acting very proactively and making sure that the dairy industry is not going to be affected by this at all.
Thank you. Doctor, I'm going to ask you the same thing as I did on Joni's disease. I suppose the federal government is backing away from their commitment to that. I know we put money into it. We've been putting money into it. What do we need to do to keep that research or that keep that ongoing, you know?
Mr. Chairman, this has been a really good partnership, the bovine tuberculosis investigation that we've been doing. All of the cattle herds that have been depopulated have been paid for by the federal government, not without some bumps in the road. There were some times when the money wasn't available right when it needed to be, but in general, they've been able to pay for it, and they've paid over $3 million in federal indemnity. They've also provided about $2.2 million for the statewide surveillance in both cattle and deer. So I think they've been stepping to the plate and contributing greatly to what Minnesota's efforts have been. We've also applied for about $500,000 cooperative agreement with the federal government for some additional resources at the Board of Animal Health to match what the governor is recommending for the board for bovine tuberculosis.
Any questions, Senator Scoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Hartman, and we hope there isn't, but if there is another herd with bovine TB infestation that has to be depopulated, what's the status of the fund that the federal government is drawing those monies out of? Does that have a balance in it or not?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoy, I'm not aware right now of what the level of funding is available. One of the problems that the federal government has right now is they haven't settled their budget, and so they're operating under a continuing resolution based on the level of funding they had last year. And so it's a little uncertain from day to day, from week to week, until the budget is settled exactly how much money is available for depopulating.
Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doctor, the testing of the whitetail is done at random, I think, during deer season, is it not? Is that how that is accomplished? And if so, what's the timeline on eradicating these whitetail? This herd of whitetail you talked about in your last report here last week. Is there a timeline before our status drops? What are we looking at?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the first question is yes. The survey that was done statewide on the free-ranging white-tailed deer, samples were collected at registration stations throughout the state, and it wasn't a requirement that you turn in those samples, so it was a random sampling of those animals. As far as the timeline for eliminating this disease from white-tailed deer, I'd probably defer that to DNR, but I would just say that as far as I know, nobody in the United States has eliminated a disease from free-ranging animals to date of this magnitude. The good news is that we've caught this, I think, fairly early, and it's a fairly localized area. So I think if anybody has a chance to eliminate a disease from a wildlife population, we have a good chance if we put the right resources in it now. As far as a timeline, the difficulty is, unlike cattle where you can round them up and you can test every animal or destroy every animal to make sure you've eliminated the disease, you can't ever capture or kill all the white-tailed deer. So I think it would require surveillance over multiple years to be sure that we'd eliminated the infection from the deer.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I thank both of you for showing up here and helping us today. Next is Bob Upreeve, Executive Director, Minnesota Milk Producers Association. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kevin Wally. I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association, standing in for Bob Lefebvre, the Executive Director, who is currently waiting to testify in a House committee on a bill that many of you have signed on, and that is a bill that would change the eligibility standard for Minnesota Care for dairy operators. So that bill is up in a House committee, and so Bob's not available. And he did ask me to provide the Senate committee with the same opportunity that we provided the House committee, and that is the House chair had asked that the members of his committee be afforded the opportunity to inspect the packaging and contents of certain dairy products. And so we have a cooler here that will be available for committee members so you can inspect and check out some of the dairy products that are available from our Minnesota dairy operators. And with that, in the interest of time, I will turn it over to Gene Bisek, one of our members.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gene Bisek, dairy farmer from up in northwestern Minnesota, Menomon, one of the poorer counties of the state, but we've done fairly well. I've been dairy farming for about just about 30 years now. I took over the family dairy farm, went to college, and spent 3 years as an officer in the Army and decided that I really like to get back to the farm. So I did that, and there's been a lot of challenges along the way. I think the challenges have been getting greater and greater and greater as we go along. Life was a lot simpler 30 years ago. It's no longer just a way of life. I think dairy farming has become a business, and most of the dairy producers in the room today and most of the producers that I associate with recognize the fact that it's got to be handled like a business if we want to continue. The financial parts of it can get to be almost beyond our control sometimes. There's been a lot of regulations along the way that have come up in the past 30 years that have certainly changed the way we've had to do handle our business. Regulations, whether they be the way we control or handle our milk, regulations involving the environment. And I think for the most part, many dairy farmers are willing to accept these regulations because they know that it means a better quality product, means a better environment for the community and for the state. But I'd like to thank the Department of Ag for the numbers that they gave and for the fact that they recognize the importance of the dairy industry. And I'm a board member of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association, and so I guess I represent many dairy farmers in the state. There are, you know, some of the bills that the committee will be considering during this session are vitally important, I think, to the dairy industry. In our case, my personal case, I had a daughter that was a music teacher for 5 years in North Dakota, and she recognized her desire to be back on the farm, and so she came back a year and a half ago, which I guess I'm glad because I'd like to see the dairy business continue in the family. But she's had an extremely difficult time. In fact, prices of milk last year and the cost that she recognized forced her to go back and get another teaching job. And I don't like to see that happen to a lot of these young people where they have to go back off the farm to get a job to support their interest in dairy farming. But I think if we can get like the investment tax credit bill passed, that's certainly going to help some of these, especially the younger ones. A lot of us guys have been in it a long time. We're established. It probably won't help me that much. But the younger ones, and they're the ones that we have to watch out for. We have to try to encourage these younger people to get back in it. Just in the past 6 months, I lost some of my help. I do have about 200 cows. Well, I've got 100 cows, and my daughter's got 100 cows. So we've got two herds on the same farm. Run them independently. She manages hers the way she wants to do it, and I manage mine. We share the equipment. I provide feed to her. Say again?
Who makes the most money?
We don't compare our money. We both have a good lifestyle. Well, I just lost some of my hired labor. We do have to have some hired labor because the work that has to be done on the farm. And so a big issue for me is the labor pool that's available for dairy operations or for any agricultural operation for that matter. So I think we've got to encourage our university systems to train people in the area of agriculture. I think we've got to educate the general public how important agriculture is, especially the dairy industry. And I appreciate any support that you members can give our industry. And for the members that are new to the committee that want to learn more about it, I'll invite anybody out to my dairy farm anytime you want to come and visit me and see firsthand what we do out there. So with that, again, thank you for the opportunity to come before you. If there's any questions, I'll learn.
Senator Wergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bisek, did you say your daughter farms with you?
Yeah, she tries. She's also teaching, so it's a little tough now, but...
Mr. Chair, then you're probably the right person to ask. When I grew up, we were on a dairy farm. There were 7 girls and 4 boys in our family, and my dad always said the girls milk cows better. So I'm wondering if you have that same theory. I think it was to get us girls to milk cows. But
Mr. Chair and Senator Bergen, I'll tend to agree with you that we just recently hired a couple to help on the farm, and the wife is doing better with the cows than the husband. So.
Mr. Chair, seriously, though, my dad always did say that the girls could tell when a cow was getting mastitis. The boys knew when the cows had mastitis.
I agree with you that, too, Senator Bergen. She says she can smell when the cow has foot rot, for example. So there is some intuitive value to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Bisek, thanks for coming today. And I wanted to ask you about a comment you made in your testimony. You said that dairy farming today needs to be handled like a business, and that your comment was, I take it, that it may not be treated that way by the legislature, by laws. And I just was wondering if you could maybe take a couple of minutes and give us some idea of what you think needs to be done differently to facilitate having the dairy industry be handled more like a business.
Senator Hahn and Mr. Chair, I guess I can try to expound on that. When I first started, I guess I viewed it as just a way of life. I liked growing up in the country. We did keep some records. And I'm not so sure if there's anything that you as senators on this committee can really do to help. But I think just supporting the dairy industry from the perspective that it is a business, and that it's not just a hobby for some people. And so whether it comes to, like I said, the dairy tax investment credit issue, the Yoni's issue, in our part of the state, we have very little support system anymore. The veterinarians are 60 miles away. The nearest place for me to get parts for my milking equipment is 120 miles. And so, the structure that we need out there is starting to dwindle, and I'm afraid if we don't, send a message to the public that this industry is vital to the state, that infrastructure is going to continue. Transportation is a big issue. Sometimes it's hard for me to get feed on the farm because of weight restrictions and so forth. And, some of these issues aren't real, real big, but when they pop up, they get to be big. I don't know if that answers your question, Senator Hahn. Thank you.
Any other questions? No, thank you very much for your testimony.
Okay, thank you again.
Members, we will move right into Senate File 287, Senator Kubley, beginning dairy farmer.
Okay.
Senator Kubley, welcome to committee.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Some of you will recognize this bill as a bill that has been before you before. It is slightly modified. I'm sure those of you that have had a chance to look at the fiscal note recognize that the fiscal note is higher than it was the last time that it was offered, and it's primarily because of the number of years that you can have been engaged in farming to be eligible for the credits that are being proposed in this bill. There are a number of people who want to testify on the bill, Mr. Chair and members, so I'd ask a couple of them to come to the table at this time as I'm talking. But, you know, I guess I had thought, too, when I read through the bill for the first time this year, that we had actually passed the beginning farmer portion of it, but it didn't make it out of the committee last year. You know, we did pass it in this committee, but it wasn't passed in the final bill. So I think just that by way of a few comments that might refresh the minds of the members that were here, and bring those that were not up to speed a little bit on the bill. So with that, we've got a couple people here at the table, and I think there are a couple more, too, Mr. Chair, a couple of active farmers who would like to offer a word of support on the bill as well. So why don't we begin with the two witnesses at the table.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Peterson. I serve as Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Farmers Union, and I'm here today to speak in favor of Senate File 287, authored by Senator Kubley, that would extend credits to help beginning farmers. Doing something for helping beginning farmers is a priority for Farmers Union, as it is for many farm organizations. We know our population and infrastructure is aging, but at the same time, agriculture is rapidly changing. The average age of a farmer in Minnesota, when the 2007 statistics are released, I believe will be about 57 years old. In 2002, it was 52. In 1997, it was 48. And I note that in Senator Erickson Rope's district, has the oldest age, and Senator at 56 years right now, and the current statistics, and Senator Kubley's has the youngest in Renville at 50. And then USDA statistics tell us that only 6% of our nation's farmers are under the age of 35. And so while this legislation may not be a silver bullet, we do believe it is a good place to start. In the past, the committee has heard bills by Senator Dill that would have given a payment to beginning dairy farmers of $1 a hundredweight, and we've heard other bills. But I spent some time recently talking with the Nebraska Farmers Union, the Nebraska Department of Agriculture, about this Nebraska-type program, and I've handed out a handout I think you all have just for some information and background on that. And I'd like to just talk briefly about that program that's been working in Nebraska since, I believe, 1999, and 2001 is when they first started putting money into it. Bottom line, when asked by myself yesterday, the Nebraska state employee who runs the program says that she has talked to many young producers that tell her that they would not have gotten into farming without the help of this program. And some of the numbers you can see in Nebraska, I don't think I included this, but about 80 farms have been started since, I think, 2001, have entered farming in Nebraska. In about the 6 years, the program has been active. And by comparison, Nebraska has about 50,000 farms compared to about 80,000 in Minnesota that make the USDA definition of a farm. Now, it's not a huge number that financially and everything that's been put into it. Nebraska, too, has put this bill and had it before them, but they've had to cut it back at times because of lean budgets that they've faced similar to Minnesota. But in this last year, and I think maybe Mr. Slobosinski might talk about this, that their levels have raised, and that's also raised a lot of interest in the program. So they tell me that it costs them about $50,000 a year to run the program. It's kind of fluctuated between $40,000 and $75,000, so I've been interested in the fiscal note that our state's produced. They see the average credit being to the renter to be between $1,400 last year and a high of $2,400 in 2001. And then the program receives about 2,000 requests a year. So in closing, I just wanted to say that I think there are ways to expand this, and we could do a lot of different things with it, and this is just the beginning. And we definitely think and urge your consideration for this bill, because we do believe that it would help some people enter farming. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Sobosinski? I mean, Mr. Peterson? Next witness, Senator Kugler.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Paul Sobosinski. I work with the Land Stewardship Project. The Land Stewardship Project is a farm and rural organization that works to promote sustainable agriculture. And just a little bit of outline today, I'm going to kind of just lay some background about why we've been involved in this bill. At the Land Stewardship Project, we have a program called Farm Beginnings, and I got two handouts I'd like to make available to the committee so that in terms of that, in working with beginning farmers, we've been doing this for approximately the past 10 years of a program that works with beginning farmers in terms of assessing goals and working with farm management pieces. And in terms of doing that, one of the pieces that comes up over and over again is in terms of the access to land. Of the people that have been through our program, about half of them of the individuals are currently farming. With other folks, it's the opportunity to get some land. And in terms of looking at this program and searching and researching this idea, we looked at last year at Nebraska's Beginning Farmer Program. And while I was having the conversations with their head of the program, the big piece that they were looking at that time was how to get better use of the program. And so they had made the change to go to a 10% credit. They had started out with a 5% credit to the landlord who would rent to a beginning farmer. So last year they made change to go to a 10% credit, and then a 15% credit if it's share rent. The interesting piece about this particular piece is that the at the time the bill was initially put into law in Nebraska, the Governor Johans, who is now, you know, United States Secretary of Agriculture, actually was involved in terms of the process. And so this bill, what we look at, provides one of the big addressing access, one of the biggest barriers to beginning farmers, access to land. According to USDA statistics, only 15% of low-equity young farmers obtain land by purchase, and that the overwhelming majority of land acquisition is through renting. The USDA study has shown that farm programs should be reoriented towards assisting low-equity beginning producers to successfully compete in rental markets. This bill does that. The tax credit helps landowners overcome the risk aversion to renting to that beginning farmer. This bill kind of provides a tool for that beginning farmer to go down the road to a neighboring farm that might be farmer might be retiring, and asking them, you know, to consider renting to the beginning farmer and providing a tax credit to help with that. I thank you for the opportunity to testify. Dennis Johnson, who is here, will be able to testify a little bit about our Farm Beginnings program, but also about how this program we think helps with the whole idea of getting people back into rural communities. The other part of the story that I think it's important to share today, we'll provide some with the testimony of Jerome Graff, who is active both in Farmers Union and Land Stewardship Project and a farmer from Brown County, is that sometimes the piece of starting a beginning farmer takes a period of time. So I think his comments will also be helpful. Thank you.
Any questions? Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Dennis Johnson from Morris, Minnesota. I'm on the advisory committee for the Farm Beginnings Program. Should point out I'm also an agricultural scientist for the University of Minnesota, but I am here representing my own views rather than that institution. I need to really compliment Mr. Basic on his comments on pointing out the situation of starting agriculturalists throughout the state of Minnesota and, in fact, in the nation. Farming does need to be a business, but also I think it can be a way of life at the same time. Many farmers still would say they are farmers because it's important to them to do things in the particular way that they do. there are a lot of new opportunities in agriculture and in dairying in Minnesota that aren't always well recognized. And it's happening, I think, through the local foods movement that is consumer-driven, that we see in demand for organic products. We see demand for excellent quality cheeses and other products that are made on the farm. There are opportunities to dairy today that probably didn't exist in the past, and many of them are particularly well attuned to the smaller producer or the beginning producer. Now, if I look back to where I grew up in Tordenskiold Township of Otter Tail County, there, if we drew a circle of 1 mile, there were 10 farms that had a farmstead in that place. And there are about 2 active farmers in that area now. That was about 50 years ago. I moved to Morris area about 30 years ago and have a home in the countryside. And there were half a dozen farmers in about a mile and a half at that time. And now there are 2. It's difficult to become established as a farmer, and we certainly recognize that people need to have the opportunity to grow and to expand. But there are many people who would like to become farmers who don't have the opportunities that once existed. At one time, we could count on our supply of new farmers to come from the farm. Families are much smaller than they once were. People are moving away for other kinds of opportunities. There are also people in the city who are 1 or 2 generations away from the farm that would love to have the opportunity to move back. They need to find a way to do it, and in many cases, a way to build the skills. And this can be done through certain kinds of programs. The Farm Beginning is certainly one of that. It provides counseling and mentoring with other kinds of farmers, farm business management training so they can build business plans and the like. If you look at this bill, one of the features is as a credit to people who take these kinds of courses who can learn to farm that way. It isn't a large amount of money, but it's the sort of thing that can be helpful and encouraging and help us to bring people back to our rural communities. We do need people who are active in economically and socially in our communities, and we can begin to make progress. There are opportunities for all kinds of dairies in Minnesota today, large and small.
Senator, any questions? Senator Kubley, do you have anybody else?
Yeah, Jerome Johnson from down by Sanborn would like to say a few words as well. He's also an active farmer, so.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Jerome Graff.
Oh, pardon me. I got your last name mixed up with Dennis Johnson. Okay.
It's all right. From Sanborn. My farming career started when I was old enough to carry a shovel and a fork, and working at home until I got married. And then I started a new chapter in my life and rented a farm. And that was in 1972. And the biggest challenge is getting the older generation to work with the younger generation. I experienced that with my dad and his brother and my sons. And it's need access to the land. And today, with the high corn prices and high land prices, it's getting extremely competitive, and I mean extremely. So, and my dad didn't give up farming until 2 weeks after his 91st birthday, which was this past July. So it's been very challenging, to say the least, the past 7 years, trying to work with my son and get him to share with the farming and get started with an adequate land base. That can, in that situation, can take all 10 years. And using that example, I helped him get started farming out of high school. I assisted with machinery, and he rented a small acreage, and he did truck driving to build up financial equity. Unfortunately, he kind of went a little bit backwards 3 years ago because he had to do my farming because I had a major operation. And now my health has returned. My son's been able to supplement his income by driving truck. And now is in a position to rent a more adequate land base. His biggest obstacle today is getting access to the land. This bill would provide an opportunity to help my son as well as other young people who would like to start farming. Agriculture needs young people to return to the farm so they can, in return, support our communities and our schools. And another problem was mentioned before, it's getting extremely difficult in some of these smaller populated areas to find people for extra work. When you got a job, it takes more than one person. So this bill is a step in the right direction to invest in keeping and getting our young people back on the farm. Thank you.
Any questions? Anybody from the audience want to speak in favor or against? Senator Scoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Kubliak, you know, I had a constituent of mine who's an older dairy farmer who's trying to work through a sale to a young couple that are trying to start dairy farming. And as I listened to him talk about what he's doing, this piece of legislation came to mind as perhaps something that would be beneficial to him. So I'd like to be part of the effort to try to get this figured out so that we can help these young people become farmers in Minnesota. But I think the question is to Senate staff, Mr. Knopf. Is there in here a tax credit for the sale of agricultural land? All I'm reading is for rental of agricultural land.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, it's my understanding that it's only the tax credit for the rental of agricultural land and not for the sale. You may want to direct that to the author.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, from my perspective, I mean, I'm primarily interested in helping people get started. If they need that little bit of a boost, I wouldn't have any objection to adding a section that deals with the sale if that's something that would be helpful. You know, I think, Mr. Chair, it needs to go to taxes after it leaves here. So, you know, I think we'd have a little time to work on that if that's something that the members would like to add.
Senator Scoy.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Kubli, well, actually, that would be, in my from my point of view, the primary focus. If it's just for renting land, that's a short-term deal that has no long-term, ramifications. I think it would be much more important to include the tax credit for the sale of the agricultural land and maybe not for even including the rental. I do see that the machinery has been removed. I think that's a positive step, and I see that you've included this farmer management class. I think it's important for young farmers to be participating in some of those farmer management programs. So I don't know, Mr. Chair or Senator Kubli, what your intentions are, but I do think that there was going to need some work on the language.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, I guess I thought that the rental agreement would help a young farmer who's just beginning kind of accumulate some equity that would allow them to move into an ownership pattern. So I guess it's seen maybe as a step back from. Trying to work out an arrangement for a sale. I guess I think most places where you're going to look at a sale, you're going to need to have some equity in order to gain the kind of backing that you need to get the financing for a sale. So I guess this is kind of a step before that would allow them a little time to accumulate that equity. That was the thought on it anyway. But I would certainly have no problem, Mr. Chair, with adding a section for a sale as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubli, with regard to the renting of the ag land, if you're a landowner in ag country and you're going to rent your 160 acres out, and you got a couple of neighbors that are interested in renting it, and one of them's a young farmer and one of them's not, and they're both willing to pay the same amount, I can see where this would then encourage them to rent to the young farmer, but it's not going to really affect the young farmer any because the money all goes to the landowner. And
well,
how is that actually going to benefit young farmers trying to get into the business when, the amount of the rent is going to be whatever the market is and we're just going to be,
Sure.
Putting these credits into established landowners.
And Ms. Chair and Senator Scorey, I guess again, just from my perspective, but it does seem to me that, I don't know. I guess I would hope that you could find a landowner that was a little bit altruistic and might be willing to share that credit, but I don't know how abundant that would be. But it would seem to me that if the tax credit simply makes land available to a beginning farmer as opposed to a farmer who may just be expanding their land base, that would be a benefit to the state as a whole, and it would be a benefit to the rural communities that they travel to patronize and send their children to school and so forth. So I think even if it were simply two people allowing or willing to pay the same rental value, that it would still have value for the state as a whole if we could get another person started.
Senator Wiggins, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I was going to echo a lot of what Senator Scoey mentioned. Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, you talked about building equity, but if you're in a rental situation, you really aren't building equity in the land, and as soon as you buy machinery, it's depreciating. So the only way really to build equity is through the purchase of the land in a really effective way. So I'd have to echo that. I'd encourage it to be on the purchase.
Okay. Well, Ms. Chair and Senator Wiggins, there's such a thing as chattel equity too. So if you're purchasing livestock and certainly purchasing machinery, even though it has a depreciation schedule, I would think that any lender that's looking at your ability to get into farming would take any form of equity into account. I don't think that land is the only form of equity that can be accumulated. It's probably one that has the most enduring value. But, a herd of dairy cattle is going to, would have some kind of value and some kind of equity when you're going to a lender.
Senator Wiggins, follow up?
Mr. Chair, and this is actually just another question related to the bill. Senator Cooley, on line 1.14, you indicate that a farm means any tract of land over 10 acres. To me, that seems relatively small. Can you tell me why you chose the 10 acres? And then I have one question a little further down also.
I believe that's the number of acres, Mr. Chair and Senator Wiggins, that the federal government requires to be classified as a farm. They say that anything over, is it $1,000 now that's considered a farm? So, you can probably gain $1,000 of income from a 10-acre parcel. So, I would agree it's probably not a parcel of size that will give you a real viable income unless you're just involved in livestock production. Then, you may in fact gain the kind of income that you need from a livestock setup that does not cover more than 10 acres.
Mr. Chair, one more question. On 1.24, a second concern that I have, number one says, is seeking entry or has entered within the last 7 years into farming. So this program would go back 7 years to someone that started farming?
Ms. Chair and Senator Wiggins, that's true, it does. And that is a change from the bill that was offered last year. Maybe you don't remember that since you're bringing up the issue. And when we go to taxes, we'll have to deal with the fiscal note. So we may have to lower that somewhat in order to get the program started and lower the fiscal impact depending on what kind of dollars we have to deal with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Deal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I was sitting here thinking about the renter's credit for people that are renting home space, apartments, and so forth. And, of course, that's money that is given to the renter because supposedly that it helps compensate for the property taxes that are part of that rental payment. And so we've got a situation there where we have a renter's credit that goes to the renter. Now, with your proposal, it's going to the landlord. And, of course, by having it go to the landlord, you're going to decrease the amount of money you need. It's $1 million or so per year on your fiscal note. If we did it like we do with the other renter's credit, it would make it much more expensive because then there'd be a lot more people trying to get in on the deal. But I guess my own thought is that it would be nicer to give the money straight to the poor farmer, poor beginning farmer, in some mechanism like I had that bill a few years ago about the dollar per hundredweight subsidy on dairy. That would be a way to get money straight directly to the young dairy farmer to help him pay his bills and make things work out. So I'm just sitting here thinking about different options, and I guess I would be more comfortable if the money was going straight to the young farmer rather than going to the rich landlord that may or may not lower the rent to compensate, or you know, it's a little less clear.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, you know, again, I guess from my perspective, I mean, I'm trying to create an incentive for the landowner to allow a beginning farmer to gain an initial land base to get into the occupation. You know, I think without an incentive there, it's going to be difficult for the landowner to, you know, to see any reason to rent to a beginning farmer. So I guess I'm just trying to give them a little bit of an incentive. It's not huge, but, you know, $100 a month is, you know, probably enough to take your spouse to Minneapolis once in a while, you know.
Senator Langsdale.
Well, let's just remember that back in the 70s we did this. And it was a little bit like this time in that land prices has gone very high. And after we got several of them going, the land prices dropped by 60%. My area went from about 2,000 an acre down to 800. The thing that what happened was that the state ended up picking up a lot of many millions of dollars worth of loss. And the thing that really bothered me about that one was that at that time we had a 90% guarantee from the guy that sold the land. So he came out smelling like a rose, and the state came up, picked up the tab. And there was really nothing that the person selling the land had to do. He could get market price and still get that incentive. And it sure seems to me that if you're going to get some kind of benefit, there should be something in return. And in that case, I thought they should have at least been willing to sell the land for below market. In this particular case, I think they should be able to rent the land for something below market if they're going to get this return. You know, there's always been a saying that farmers live poor and die rich. And a lot of farmers my age, I'm past retirement, but I haven't retired. But anyway, many of them are in very, very good shape financially, the best they've ever been in their life. And it would seem like if we're going to give them this kind of credit that there'd be some kind of move on their part to rent the land for less than market. I don't see – it's that other program, I was nervous about it to begin with, and it was just a disaster. So I think we better be careful how we do this. And I just think the landowner – whether he's selling the land or renting it, should come up with an offer for this young farmer that's less than market. Otherwise, I don't know if we've really gained much.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Langseth, I guess, you know, under the rental agreement, of course, you don't have that problem. I guess, you know, I can see where that would be there under the land ownership piece that was there in the 70s.
Senator Langseth, just along that same line, cash rent to my son, and he was working his mother and his dad over to lower the cash rent because he wanted to be sure he could make some money. This was on a Sunday, and I made the deal on Sunday, and I cut it in half. Oh, what do you, you know what happened Monday morning? Here come a brand new pickup. In the that is it. I said, son, you finally gave me the pick. I always wanted a pickup. You brought it over this morning. That's a true story. Okay, any other questions? Anybody from the audience?
I have one other question, Mr. Chair. Do you have any more land available for rent?
On a serious note, before we move, I've sat and watched this committee, and I've been on it for 21st year now. And, you know, when you ask farmers what their occupation is, they kind of mumble farmer. We ought to come right out there and say, by God, I'm a farmer, just as good as a doctor or pharmacist. Or, and we just have that kind of fluency. If we're going to get ahead in a farm industry, we got to say, hey, we're farmers, and we're doggone proud of being farmers. So I want all of you on this committee, somebody ask you if you're a farmer. If you're not, tell them you love the farmers, if nothing else. But we have got to get that message out, because I tell you what, if you want, we eat good in this country. And if we didn't have the farmers, you would not eat good in this country. Any other questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's probably true of rural members in general. You know, they like a little melancholy, and a lot of them think if they can get it in church, that's even better, you know.
Senator Cooley, what do you want to do with your bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 287 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Senator Cooley moves that Senate File 287 be recommended to pass and referred to Taxes. Senator Cooley, you will work with the tax chair.
And I'd be willing to work with Senator Scoia if he wants to add a paragraph on that as well.
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
We'll move. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Bill.
Ahead with the next agenda item, Senate File 76. Senator Vickerman is going to be testifying on behalf of the
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we put this bill together last year and passed it out of agriculture and passed it out of taxes and then sent it to the big package, and the big package failed to pass. First, I'm not going to tell you the reason, but there wasn't a tax bill last year. That's why nothing passed out of the committee. So I'm bringing this back again, and it simply, Madam Chair, establishes a dairy investment income tax credit equal to 10% of the first $500,000 of the amount paid for qualifying expenditures by a person who raises dairy animals. Qualifying expenditures for pastures do not include acquisitions. Credit is limited to the entity's income tax liability and may be carried over for up to 15 years. A qualifying expenditure must be made after December 31st, 2006, and before January 1st, 2013. The maximum credit under this program is $50,000, and a limit applies to partnerships, S-corporations, trusts, estates, and married couples. Madam Chair, members of the committee, just simply trying to do one more thing to try to keep farmers on the farm. It's hard to be a dairyman. I used to be one. Didn't bother me to be up 5 o'clock in the morning and go out and take care of the cows, and I'll tell you why. Because when it was 30 below, that was the warmest place on my farm was in the dairy barn. So it's kind of fun, but my sons and my daughters complained to Dad, and I had a grade A dairy barn. And they said, well, I don't care how grade A it is. When I go to school, I still smell cow in my hair. So they had to take an extra bath before they got on the school bus. And I say this also, my two daughters can pitch manure with the best of anybody. The later ones, when I got rid of the dairy herd, just sat and watched television. And that's just how the changes. You have to love dairy, and I just loved it, and I still do. I still be doing it today, but my two oldest boys said, You might love your cows, but we love our girlfriends, and we're not going to sit there and hang around that dairy barn all that time. So that worked, and I think, I don't know if Mr. Wally, he's maybe not here. All this does is help get some money out there, and I believe it's governed by RFA, I believe, is part of this. Am I looking at it right? Well, I tell you what I'm going to do, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask two people to come up here, two at a time. And Richard Kidman from Ballatin, if he is here, would come up and tell you a little bit more about it. And Michael Andrews from Sox Center, he's here. Essence of time, we can maybe take them both at one time. This is nothing new. It's something we've had and tried time, but as Senator Kubley's bill, all good intentions here, still is going to have to go to the tax committee and figure out what we can do in the tax committee. So who wants to start? Do you like to first state your name for the record?
Madam Chairman, I'm Richard Kidman. I'm from southwestern Minnesota. We drove 180 miles on icy roads this morning to get here and tell you how important we think this is. I'm a dairy farmer. I have two sons working with me, and we're looking at some expansion. I'm at the age where, you know, maybe I shouldn't. Why should I stick my neck out? But I have one son that's really into it, and he would love to, but, you know, it takes a lot of money. $1 million doesn't go a long ways anymore for expansion, and I think anything that the state of Minnesota can do to just a little shot in the arm maybe, you know, with his tax investment credit would be just a wonderful thing to give a little boost to the dairy industry. And I just think it would be well worth the money that it does cost to generate some more dairy, you know, in the state of Minnesota, where they say we're losing farms, and I'm sure we are. You know, there's big farms coming in, but I don't think they can replace. We milk 80 cows, and there's a lot of them in our area that do the same thing. You go further south, it's a good dairy area. You know, we raise our own feed, and the people want to be there. They want to do it. You know, it's a business, but it's also a way of life. And, you know, there's really nothing else that we want to do, you know, and we just would, anything that the state can do to make it possible, well, we sure would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kidman.
Madam Chair, my name's Michael McAndrews. I own and operate a 250-cow dairy in Sox Center with my parents. Without their help, none of it would have been possible. Just to thank the opportunity to and support this bill. I grew up on a traditional family farm, I guess you could call it. We milked 40 cows in Jordan. It wasn't financially feasible place to do an expansion. That's why we moved up to Sox Center here this last March. Some things about the farm, we bought it from a couple that was basically going broke. They expanded to the 250 cows from 40. They didn't put the infrastructure in with heifer facilities and feed storage and just the extra stuff that goes with expanding. The bank gave them enough money to expand cows, but not the support stuff. Kind of a sad case for them. For us, it looked like an opportunity where we bought it fairly cheap as far as the dairy part, and we're hoping to put money back into putting the infrastructure, the heifer facilities and feed structures and stuff like that. In doing that, we could, now the bill states about $500,000 tax incentive. We could get to that amount pretty easily just out of 250 cow numbers. I like the idea that the bill stated that it's going to take 15 years. You can use that over time. In projects for this amount of money being carried, it's nice that it'll take time and take the time to do things right, research stuff, and put the right facilities in for the right situation. To do something in a short period of time would obviously rush things, and a lot of times when you're building stuff, dealing with local governments, it takes a lot longer than that, so we appreciate that part of the bill. If anybody has any questions, feel free to answer them.
Does the committee have any questions for Mr. McAndrew or Mr. Kidman or the senator?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kidman, what might you and your sons do if this becomes law? Do you look at this as an opportunity? Do you have something on the plate or in the
right.
hopper?
Yeah, right. We're looking at expansion and, you know, spending probably a minimum of $500,000-$600,000, and this sure would be a nice little benefit for the tax-wise part of it. One thing I forgot to mention, the state of Minnesota did lower our 179 tax exemption for new purchases. It went from $100,000 down to $25,000. And, you know, March 1st is tax day for farmers, and we've been working on taxes. And my estate taxes are going to be substantially higher this year because of that little change. So this would be a big benefit, you know, for saving of taxes. You know, we don't pay huge amounts of tax, but anything helps. So it would be a definite incentive.
Members, I don't know if you have the bill in front of you, but it can be pre-stall barns, fences, watering facilities, feed storage, for milk parlors, robotic equipment. We're coming into a new world today than it used to be just milk the cows. Now we've got all this robotic equipment, scales, milk storage and cooling, bull tanks, manure pumps, digesters. That's another thing we're looking at with digesters to use that methane gas to help run the operation. There's all kinds of things coming forward that probably wouldn't come forward if we didn't give you a little tax break to help pick that up. So with that, I have two more people, Madam Chair. Dave Miner from New Prague and Paul Sobosinski, if you'd both come up.
Senator Vickerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul.
Excuse me, just one moment. Senator Vickerman, did we want to have Paul Sobosinski wait until the end? You have three additional witnesses on your list. It's my understanding the other people are from out of town, and we could always ask our local guests to come back if we run out of time. I understand, according to the list here, we should be going to Steve Schlangen and Dave Miner. If you wouldn't mind, sir. Okay. Steve Schlangen here? Okay, thank you. We're just trying to recognize witnesses from out of town and the distance they traveled. We do have some local witnesses who can come back at another time if we run out of time today. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman and committee. My name is Steve Schlangen. I'm a dairy farmer in central Minnesota in Stearns County. I farm with my wife and four children. We run about 70 cows and 220 acres of land. I also serve on the board of directors for Associated Milk Producers and on the board of directors for Minnesota Association of Cooperatives, where we represent about 80 to 85% of the milk in the state. We expanded our operation back in 1992 when we went from a 40-cow tie-stall barn up to a 70-cow freestall barn with a milking parlor. And we found with that we've had a lot less work and a lot better income. And we enjoy it as of today. Just this past summer, we had a barn fire. Our old barn burned to the ground and destroyed our silos and everything. So we rebuilt that, and I can tell you that today we're up and running and things are better and more handy than they've ever been. I have twin boys who are 12 years old in sixth grade, and I do know that if I have a nice setup, there's a lot better chance that they'll be coming back to the family farm than if I have an old, outdated setup. But this bill is more than just about dairy farmers. This is about the economy in rural Minnesota. And if you look across the border to Wisconsin, you can see how their bill has affected their economy. It really doesn't cost anything in the long run. It really has a very good return on it. And besides, our farmers don't just own have investments in their own farms, but they also own their own co-ops. Over 90% of our milk goes through dairy co-ops. These co-ops do everything from bottling milk to making sliced cheese to packaging butter and many other value-added products. These plants need milk. The fuller we keep them, the more efficiently we can run them, the better we can return to our dairy farmers. These processing plants not only provide jobs, but also bring a lot of outside money in from around the country, and more recently, from around the world. We've had sales in recent years to places like South Africa and China. There is a world shortage of protein, and dairy protein is one of the best things for the people of Asia and around the world. I believe if we don't protect and enhance our dairy industry, I think we all lose. This dairy investment tax credit is one small way the state can help itself and at the same time send a positive message to our dairy industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schlangen.
Madam Chair, if you look on, I forgot one important piece of this legislation. Also, on-farm processing and refrigerated trucks for delivery of milk and other dairy products. That's all part of what you can qualify for, just exactly what you said.
Thank you, Senator.
Any questions?
I don't know. If,
Mr. Miner, would you like to speak?
Madam Chairman, committee members, my name is Dave Minar. My wife, Florence, is sitting behind me, and our family operates Senior Summit Farm at New Prague. We're about an hour south of here. We milk 150 cows. We're on a rotational grazing system, and we bottle our own milk and make ice cream there and distribute it all over the Twin Cities area and around the state also and into Wisconsin a little bit. This bill is very important because anybody that's interested in grazing, it's got some help in there with fencing and pasture development. And the most important part is the dairy processing. Our whole family is involved in our operation one way or another. We have two sons that are employed there full time. Our oldest son, we pulled him out of industry and paid him a good salary to come to manage the creamery for us, manage our processing hall. Our youngest son, Dan, is our marketer and salesman. Our daughter Laura works at the plant one day a week. She's got a couple small children. We've got a son-in-law that's a computer guru that set up our database. We've got another daughter-in-law that's an accountant that does all of our numbers for us every quarter, so we know exactly where our margins are. We're pretty proud of the fact that we've got 16 employees that we write checks for. Most of those are full-time, and they all live within 10 miles of home. We also employ a number of local farmers that probably wouldn't be able to afford that equipment if it wasn't for us. We hire a guy to bale all our hay, all 2,600 bales, round bales of it, and also another man that wraps all the hay for us. We feed baleage during the summer and during the winter. Another man, local company, empties our lagoon every year. So we're pretty proud that we're kind of, I think we'd make a pretty good local impact with only 150 cows. We need to start thinking about a lot of small dairies that could be doing a lot of small things like this. Florence and I were privileged to travel to Italy last October to attend Slow Foods Terra Madre. Terra Madre is a world meeting of farmers. 5,000 farmers attended from all over the world. What an enlightening experience. And in conjunction with that event was the Salone del Gusto. It's the largest food show in Italy, where there are literally hundreds of farmers that exhibit their own products, be it meat or cheese or apples or anything that they grew on their farm. And every time I went to one of these booths and asked them, who made this? I did, or my wife did. So I think there's a lot of room. You know, Italy's been at it for 2,000 years. You know, they've developed their own food culture. We've only been at it 200 years. We've got a long ways to go. And I think, you know, the way they teach their young in marketing and those kind of things, I'm really impressed. Really impressed with that. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Minar. Any questions, Senator Dill?
Oh, Madam Chair, Mr. Minar, I'd like to thank you for visiting my farm last year on that sustainable farming tour we had out there, and I'd like to congratulate you on all the success you've had with your own farm business there. It's really impressive.
Well, thank you, Senator. We enjoyed the visit to your farm very much. Yeah.
Any further questions for these witnesses? Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. And we'll now call John Funk from Melrose and Y. Spano from the Dairies Federation of Minnesota.
Yeah, Steve.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today in support of the investment tax credit bill that you're considering. I'm John Funk from Melrose, Minnesota, central Minnesota. We have 500 cows, and I, along with my wife and my three sons, we have a family corporation, which we started in expanding in 1997. To give you some background on there, I started farming in 1972, and we farmed a traditional 50-cow dairy until 1997, when my first son returned home from Ridgewater College and an interest in dairy. And at that time, we talked about building, but my second son was then also going to Ridgewater College and showed an interest in coming back in the dairy industry. So we built a new dairy in 1997 for 280 cows, and we expanded it three times since that time, whatever. Last year, our third phase of about $1 million was added to our farm, so I'm not speaking in terms of this investment tax credit that would benefit our dairy because we've been there in the past couple of years. But after we, or before we made the third phase, my oldest son, who was a graduate from college and was off doing work in business and finance, that was his major, also wanted to come back to the farm. That's when we did our third phase and moved about 500 cows. I think the dairy investment tax credit is really important for the infrastructure of Minnesota. I made a comparison this morning that quite a number of years ago, we, as the state of Minnesota, made an investment in some of our ethanol industry. And, of course, that was a new industry or whatever. And, of course, now we can see some of the payback from all the jobs that ethanol provided through the years. I think Commissioner Hugeson had some stats here just recently as to all the jobs that it provided, whatever. Well, the dairy industry isn't new to our industry like the ethanol industry was. But I feel that we have the stats were said here earlier today that of all the farmers that were declining, whatever. And I think we, myself and other farmers that are my age, can invest in our infrastructure so that we have adequate equipment, buildings, so that these new farmers that want to enter the business have something positive to look forward to and have some structure there so that they can have a profitable dairy. We all know that there isn't very many of us that that win that $1 million lottery. And I can tell you that in this dairy business today, not just my size, but it takes an awful lot of dollars. And I'm not advocating here that we are advocating for just my size farm. I think this is for any size farm that wants to be profitable, whatever their goals are. I believe what they said earlier, that you got to have it in your heart to farm. And I heard a statement here earlier. We all say, how many farmers do we have? Well, we're only probably less than 2% of the population. But I also heard something here earlier today saying that, you know, we eat very well here in America. We have, every one of us usually eats 3 squares a day, and so we're all farming from the land each and every time that we have food. I thought it was a very good statement today. So I really think that we need to reinvest in dairy agriculture just as this body made a decision sometime a year to invest in the ethanol industry, and maybe soon you're going to be asked also to invest in bio cellulose, biomax energy, or whatever. I think that's the wave of the future. We definitely cannot keep importing oil. I'm getting out of a different tangent, but it's part of investing in our infrastructure in our dairy farms of Minnesota. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, or if anybody would ever like to come out to our farm, I'd be more than happy to sponsor that for you.
Thank you, Mr. Funk. Any committee questions? Okay, we'll move on to Mr. Spano.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Y. Spano. I am here today representing the Dairies Federation of Minnesota. Our folks put the milk in the bottles like you have there, and we buy the milk to give to the hungry consumers. My only purpose in being here today is to tell you that my clients want and need more milk. A lot of what we bottle in Minnesota is sold, frankly, in Chicago. Almost 25% of the milk that's processed in this state is sold outside the state. And the need is kind of constantly growing for milk. We just need a lot of it. And the need is has begun in the past 10 years, really, outgrowing the supply. And so more and more, our members have to go across the border to get their milk. We'd like to buy as much as we can in Minnesota. We really appreciate Senator Vickerman and the Milk Producers Association bringing this idea forward. It's just one step that we'd like to see happen to make more milk.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Spano?
Madam Chair, Spano, I noticed you the bottles that went around, little glass, summer, chocolate, strawberry. You can refresh my memory, but I believe we're going to push the schools to have that kind of a product in school rather than pop, and I think I'm right. And it must be good because one person around somewhere around here drank his already.
I maybe just like to add a comment. I think that we as a nation, I think, are poised to be really involved in the dairy industry. I think it's a very healthful food. We talk about our three-a-day program, whatever. We talk about some new research that just come out lately that where milk in the diet actually helps control weight. I think it's just an excellent time for us in the dairy industry to be expanding our business.
And, Madam Chair, in response to that, Senator Lori's predecessor actually was very involved in that, and it may be that he may want to continue that. That his predecessor had the same last name as he did. So.
Thank you. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Spano, I'm glad I kept these two products here. I think a good reason that they're starting to sell more in the school is the way we finally started to package dairy products, that they're attractive. Whether we like it or not, the fact that it has 7 grams of fat and 270 calories doesn't mean much to kids. It means something to people like me. But that's a big step in the right direction. And I think it shows even in our schools when we're up to just about 70% of all beverages out of machines in schools being those beverages other than pop. In other words, milk and fruit juice and water are selling to a far greater extent than pop. So I appreciate what you're doing with the attractive packaging. That might sound pretty superficial, but it makes a big difference when you're interesting a kid in something.
What? I don't think the chocolate hurts in those two either.
Madam Chair, you notice I kept these two right here.
I see that.
And Madam Chair, relative to that, one of the things I found out in the last few years working with Senator Lori on milk in schools was how much more expensive it is to offer a vending machine with milk in it as opposed to vending machine pop. I didn't realize that pop is really warm until it gets right down to the end and then drops out. Milk, unfortunately, you have to keep the whole machine, and it's a lot more expensive to run a machine like that. And so there are just enormous number of hurdles. And pop is kind of a fascinating product. It's dairy farmers would love to have that kind of markup. I'll tell you.
I'd like to also comment, if I could, on the milk. I'm also a school board member at Melrose for some 20-plus years or whatever, but I recently, with the advocate of the chugs like we have over here, I call them plastic or chugs, whatever, I challenged our food service director that I would pay the difference in the from the paper to the carton for a three-week trial over at our school district. And right now, currently, that's 13 cents difference unless we get a better bid. But what my objective in that commitment is that hopefully our children, what I hear is that they really accept the chugs very well or the plastic, whatever, and that they will have a positive experience with the milk that they have during those 3 weeks, and that we can possibly offer that milk in plastic for the upcoming school year. And that's my goal in offering that research or whatever, or that trial for our school district at Melrose.
Thank you. Senator Wiggin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Funk, I'd really be curious to hear what the result is of that, if you could let us know.
I will comment that we haven't given that affirmative yet because we are trying to do the research as to how we would handle the product if we had it next year. Would we recycle? Do we have someone there that would take the product? What would it cost? I'm talking about the recycled plastic, whatever. And so we want to do the research before we offer that to our students, because if we can't handle it in an appropriate manner next year with our custodian staff, with our pickup service, whatever, then we want to cross that bridge before we offer to the students. So the students don't know about it. It's between myself, our Tahoe food service, and our food director. At this time, we're trying to work out the things in between there.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. And I think dovetails real nicely with the fact that I think I'm hearing around the Senate a lot of interest in local foods being used in school districts. We'll move on to our next two witnesses. Paul Sobosinski, if you would please come back to the table. And then also Kevin Papp, the president of Minnesota Farm Bureau.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. My name is Paul Sobosinski. I'm a farmer from Wabasso, Minnesota. I also work with the Land Stewardship Project Policy Program. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'll really be rather short. Dave Menard, I think, really provided a background and overview of what we're trying to see move forward in this bill. We really appreciate the fact that this bill is all-inclusive and addresses other areas of ways for farmers to compete, like on-farm processing and pasture development. Addresses some of the profitability questions in terms of farmers who perhaps might be organic. And it also addresses the piece that we think is really important, sending a clear message to all dairy farmers across the state that this is an opportunity for them to compete, an opportunity for them to use this in terms of upgrading their operations and making changes in terms of the next coming years. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Sobosinski? Okay. Mr. Papp, please.
Thank you. Excuse me. My name is Kevin Papp. I'm the president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. My wife, Julie, is with me today, and I raise corn, soybeans, and boys on our farm in Blue Earth County. I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee members for the opportunity to appear before you today. I'm here representing Minnesota Farm Bureau, a grassroots membership organization representing farmers in 78 organized counties. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports passage of a state income tax credit for investment in livestock farms. We've got five quick reasons why we support that. Certainly, number one, and very evident, this is good for our members that are dairy farmers. Certainly to upgrade and modernize facilities and equipment, improve animal care and safety, improve manure handling and storage. But number two, this is also good for the members that are not dairy farmers. This is good for our members that are concerned about their local economy, concerned about their businesses on Main Street, their school districts, and their churches in the community. Like it's been mentioned before, dairy cows are very powerful economic engines that generate income, business activity, and jobs. We talked earlier, we heard about the Minnesota Department of Ag study. Again, one dairy cow, over $15,000 of economic activity. Three, this is good for our members that are adding value by being involved in renewable fuel production of ethanol and biodiesel. The Minnesota biofuels industry needs Minnesota animal agriculture. Livestock consume the co-products. You cannot be for value-added renewable fuel and against value-added animal agriculture. They must have each other to be sustainable. Number four, this is good for the members that want to bring the next generation back to the farm. As we bring sons, daughters, daughter-in-laws, son-in-laws in, labor many times is the one asset, their greatest asset. Livestock requires people living year-round in rural Minnesota, and we want to make sure that continues. More families equal more kids in the schools, equal more kids to use those local businesses. And number five, we're for this. This is good for the members that are concerned about the environment. Dairy is based on renewable resources. More cows equal more pasture and hay, more crop diversity, which is certainly better for the environment. We know fields properly fertilized with manure have reduced runoff and soil loss, and we certainly support this income tax credit and would be happy to answer any questions.
Members, do you have any questions for Mr. Papp? Any additional questions for Senator Scott?
Madam Chair, I have an amendment that I'd like passed out. Senator Vickerman, I talked to you about this earlier, and members of the committee. As Senator Vickerman mentioned in his opening, this initiative's been around for a while. In fact, in 2005, it was in the Senate bill, and it was in the House bill, and last year it was in the Senate bill. The House didn't have a bill, but we've kind of struggled with this. And as I've watched this idea move forward, I've been trying to find ways to help this thing pass. And one of the things that I think we need to kind of think about doing is broadening the public policy that's being addressed with the tax credit and, beyond just keeping dairy farmers in business, which I recognize is important, but there's 201 legislators, and we need a majority of those to be supportive. And so I've been thinking about broadening the scope of this a little bit. And Senator Vickerman, I'm not going to do anything without your approval on this, and I'll let you kind of decide what you want to do. But what the A2 amendment does is it requires that 25% of the qualifying expenditures must be related to water quality. Water quality being determined by and if having a positive impact on the county's local water management plan. I know that all counties have these plans. They generally are dealing with E. coli or sediment or TMDLs or whatever they are, and so that's all there. I have to tell you, I think mostly what projects that the dairy farmers would be doing will have positive impacts on the environment and water quality, whether it's part of their manure handling system or expanding their pasture or dealing with their yard. But I'd like the committee and Senator Vickerman, I'd like you to consider this. Think about whether this would be a positive addition to help the dairy investment credit pass into law, and I'd look forward to whatever discussion people had about this amendment.
Senator Scoy, I'm going to ask some of the members of this committee to give me some direction.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think it's absolutely outrageous that this bill has not passed the last two times we've had it up here. This is the third time, the third legislative session we're going to try it. And when I think back on the 20 years, this is my 21st year in the legislature, same as you, Senator Vickerman, and I believe 20 years ago there were something like 25,000 dairy farms in this state or something like that. I don't remember the number exactly, but it's a lot of farms, and now we're down to 5,200, less than 5,200. And when you think back over the last 20 years on what the dairy industry has asked the legislature to do to help them, you can think about the Dairy Profitability Enhancement Program, which costs $1 million a year, help with Yoni's disease control, now TB control. There's been a few requests for changes in the RFA program, changes in the feedlot program to make it a little more friendly toward livestock producers and make it more workable. But when you think about all the things that we've done in the last 20 years to help the dairy industry,
It is just pathetic in comparison to what we've done to help the ethanol industry and the corn producers, and it's I think it's an embarrassment that we haven't done more to help them over these many years, especially when they've been in such decline. And I first I've seen this amendment here. We already know we have tough feedlot regulations already in this state, and anybody that's going to expand their dairy industry or dairy facility is going to have to meet the standards the MPCA has in place, and the water quality is going to be protected. So I guess I'm not very enthusiastic for this. I think it's an embarrassment that we haven't done more to help the dairy industry during the last 20 years, and now there's this one program here that we've had up for the third year in a row, which is going to cost $5 million a year, according to the fiscal note. And I just think we ought to move forward without any strings attached to it. We ought to make sure we get it passed this year. The dairy industry needs it. They deserve it. They're hard workers. They're producing an essential product in this state. And I just think we should pass the bill the way you've got it.
Thank you. Senator Scoyer, then Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dill, I agree with you. This certainly is an important initiative. It's just that in my relatively short time here, I've watched it, and every once in a while there appears to be issues that haven't been able to get the ball rolling down the other side and actually become law, no matter how much support people have said that they have for it. Like I said, in 05, this was in both Senate and House bills. Theoretically, the governor said he was supportive of it, and when it was all said and done, it didn't happen. Like I said, I wasn't going to push this. I'm not going to offer this if the committee members don't think it's necessary. It's just that I took a look at what was the bill. The bill's basically the same as what we had last year. Maybe there's enough changes in the legislature that it'll happen this year. I don't know. But I was trying to help it along its way.
Thank you. Senator Wergen, then Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Scoy, I'm looking at your amendment, and while I think it could apply to several different areas, it could apply to freestall barns, fences, watering facilities, some things like that, but I think it might also limit the ability of dairy farmers to use it on things like robotic equipment, scales, milk storage, digesters, equipment for producing energy. I mean, there's several initiatives that actually might not even qualify under your amendment, so that would concern me. I understand what you're doing, but it would concern me that it would really limit what it could be used for.
Thank you, Senator Murphy.
Well, Madam Chairman, I was kind of going to bring up the same point, but from a different standpoint, Senator Wergen, it says expenditures must be responsive. It doesn't say that they have to be directly attributable to the comprehensive local water management plan. It says that it just has to be responsive. All those things that you talked about, every farmer in here can sell that as being responsive to the local water management plan. It doesn't matter. I understand what Senator Scoy is doing here. You know, agriculture, our biggest opponents are some of our most ardent environmental friends. And I think that this is an attempt to bring them along. Everything that happens on the farm is responsive to somebody's comprehensive local water management plan. The biggest environmentalists are not in Minnesota, don't belong to Greenpeace and Sierra Club. They're in this room. And, I would hope that the people that belong to Greenpeace and Sierra Club and some of these others would look at the folks in this room, because they're the ones that are the best environmentalists, the best stewards of our land that we have. Unfortunately, the people in this room don't get any recognition for that they just don't, because, manure smells bad. And we all know that, there's some people that belong to Greenpeace and some of these other groups might not like the smell, but they sure like eating every day, the three squares that y'all talked about earlier and everything else. I understand what Senator Scoy is doing here, but, by God, Senator Scoy, I don't think that we need to to do this. I think that we just need to have the will to do it. And, you know, if anything happens with our tax bill this year, I think that the one provision, if everything else blows up and nothing lives, I think the one that lives is Senator Vickerman's bill. And Senator Dill, you're right. I mean, when I chaired the committee, you know, we've talked 100 times about the amount of money that we have invested in ethanol over the years. And that's a wonderful market, but agriculture is much more than just corn. It's much more than just ethanol. And we need everybody. And that's why I like the way that you've presented your bill today, Senator. You had large operators up here, small operators, people that invest or that are invested like Mr. Spano's clients. You've got land stewardship working with Farm Bureau and Farm Services and all these folks. Everybody in the ag community wants to get this done. Senator Dill, it's not just pathetic that we haven't spent more on our dairy farmers. It's pathetic that we haven't spent more in this state on agriculture. Well, I had a group of folks up in the office earlier today, and we were talking about the issue of economics statewide. The airport doesn't drive the economics of the state. It's agriculture. It's over 40% of the money that this state has is because of the people in this room. It's not because of Mr. Steenland and the Northwest Airlines. It's not because of Carl Polad and the Minnesota Twins. It's the people around here that get up at 4 o'clock every morning and go out to the milk barn. And, you know, by God, I think that all of ag deserves more of our budget and not just the skinny little, I think it's like 2% of our state's budget. That is the pathetic part. And Senator Vickerman, when the time comes and if everything else blows up, I say we run this bill on its own. And we pass it and put it on the governor's desk. He'll sign it, and we'll have a law. But the time to this monkey business of fiddling around and playing politics with the other body and the governor and all that, it's got to stop. Wisconsin's moved ahead of us in this area. And, you know, the only thing that down in my district that I ever want to go into Wisconsin is a toll bridge. So.
Senator Scoy.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just laid it out on the table for discussion. I'm hearing pretty clearly that the committee doesn't think that this is an addition to the bill. So.
Senator Scoy,
good luck.
Would you be so kind to the chairman to pull this back, and I'll work with you because I know where it's going after here, and we'll have a little more time, a little more comfort zone.
Senator Vickerman, I never offered the amendment, so it's
oh, you didn't.
It's
okay.
Just a discussion point at this point.
Okay.
Thoroughly discussed.
No action.
Well, if there's no further questions, Madam Chair, then I would move that Senate File 76 be recommended to pass and it be referred to the Tax Committee. I can't help that that's where it is. And Senator Murphy, maybe me and you can visit. We'll. I don't know if I can go by the Tax Committee, but maybe we can get enough pressure to.
Well, I tell you what, that new tax chair, Senator Vickerman's bigger than both of us put together. So
maybe we need to bring around Scoy and Dill, too.
Thank you. If there's no further discussion, I'll call the vote on Senator Vickerman's bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The bill carries. Thank you. And I believe that's the end of our committee. Shall I adjourn, Senator?
Yeah, we'll have
okay, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.